Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 51. We are officially one episode away from our big one-year anniversary. I'm so excited about that. That is so crazy to me that we've been doing this for a solid year. I don't know, time flies, but regardless, I have to admit, I'm kind of a skeptic. So when I hear things that seem a little bit too good to be true, I immediately think that they're not going to be a good option. My brain is trained that way. It's a limiting belief. I understand that. And that mentality can sometimes hurt me because it hinders me from seeing opportunities. And why I share that with you is because that has been 100% my experience with real estate investing. I like the idea. I think it's cool. But at the end of the day, I'm skeptical. And so it was really fun because I got to chat with Clayton Morris about his journey from drowning in debt to financial freedom. And honestly, it blew my mind. It really opened my eyes to more possibilities. So much so that between our previous guests, Mindy Jensen and Limor Markman, and now Clayton, I'm starting to run some numbers to see if I can actually invest in my first property. So we'll see. I'll keep you guys posted on how that all goes down. So before we dive into today's guest, I wanted to share a pretty cool money win with you. This one came from Heather in the private Facebook group, Manage Your Money Like a Boss, which you should totally be in. If you're not there, go search it right now and join in the party. That's where we hang out all the time. All right, so Heather said she found a no-fee savings account with 2.3% interest. Hashtag money win. Heather, that's incredible. I think, guys, this is a Canadian thing. Canada has all the good stuff. So we in the States might be a little bit SOL there, but it's through EQ Bank if you're interested. Check it out. I haven't done any research into that, so I'm not quite sure if it's a Canada thing or a US thing as well. But regardless, let's talk about today's guest. Today's guest is Clayton Morris. Clayton's a news anchor on the number one cable news show in the world. When he's not interviewing presidential candidates, he's building his successful real estate investing business or helping investors buy their first rental property and build financial freedom. He's the founder of a top-rated podcast, Investing in Real Estate. He started Morris Invest because he realized his passion is helping first-time real estate investors, much like me, learn that they don't have to work for a paycheck and they don't need $1 million to achieve quote unquote freedom. I think that's really cool because we are always so tied to that $1 million number. I'm not quite sure why, but it's there. It's kind of a thing. And we think you need $1 million to be free. And it's actually just not true. So in this episode, we talk about what life was like growing up for Clayton, traveling around the nation as a reporter and a news anchor, how his business works. He goes into a little bit of detail about what it actually looks like today because it's kind of cool. The hardest part about finding investment properties, this is, I think, every investor's issue, their dilemma, so to speak, paying off $75,000 in credit card debt. That was incredible. He's got a good story behind that. Secrets to building true wealth and how to calculate your freedom number. This is something that I really appreciated, is trying to figure out how many rental properties, in theory, would you need to retire or to be free. So he shares a formula on how to do that. And then we talk a little bit about his first ever real estate investing property and some of his lessons learned there. Don't forget, guys, Clayton shares a resource for you to go and download your freedom number. So he has a calculator that teaches you how to do this. It's a 3-page PDF. And you can get that at morrisinvest.com/freedom. So go check that out. Come hop in the Facebook group. Keep the conversation going. Let me know what you think of this episode. And I am so excited to introduce you to Clayton Morris from morrisinvest.com. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. Today, we're going to be talking about Clayton Morris's journey from drowning in debt to building a pretty kick-butt empire in real estate and getting financial freedom. So this is going to be a really fun conversation. I think you guys are going to love it. Clayton has a really interesting day job, if we even call it that, Clayton, but it's going to be fun. So thank you so much for joining and sharing your story today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Whitney. I'm really excited to talk about this.
Yeah, well, real estate is something that I'm finding more and more my audience really wants to learn more about. It seems like that's this big scary thing and that it's so out there for people. So I appreciate that you have a podcast teaching people exactly how to do this stuff, and it's called Investing in Real Estate. And then you also have morrisinvest.com. But can you take us back a little bit further? How the heck did you even get to what you're doing today? And tell us a little bit about your quote unquote day job.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a weird journey. I knew since I was a kid that I wanted to work in television and broadcasting. I loved broadcasting. I loved the medium of it, you know, where I would sneak downstairs and my parents thought I was asleep, and I would watch Letterman and I'd watch Johnny Carson, and I just turned 40. So, you know, it's like that was part of my childhood, and I would see David Letterman sort of turning the camera around on his cue card guy who just spilled coffee all over the set. He'd, you know, have some fun with them. And so that was like fascinating to me that you could do that, right? That you could break down that sort of fourth wall and of television where we're actually seeing how the sausage is made. So I always loved that. And that's what I try to do now on Fox News Channel, on my show on Fox and Friends, which is, look, if something happens, let's just get a camera on it and have fun with it, you know? And so that to me has always been a compelling. So when I'm on the show and I'm in those moments, I feel like I'm like truly alive. You know, I still love broadcasting. I've lived all over the country, and you start out in the news business, you move all over the country and you make no money, so much so that you really, you know, like go into debt unless you have like a parent that's funding your journey, you know? And I did not. I grew up with a lot of fears around money. My parents would say, you know, we're not the Rockefellers, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. We can't afford that. And so I grew up with all these negative associations with money. That's why I preach on my podcast how to talk to your children about money is so important, because those will stay with you and they're very hard to unwind. It takes a lot of years of maybe therapy and positive affirmations and journaling to decouple that and to think that money, you know, I've had to come to a realization that money is not something you can hold on to. It's something that flows through you. And once you realize that you can give and money flows through you, then you become wealthier. It's those people that want to hold on to it greedily that don't create wealth and don't create true, you know, true financial freedom for themselves. So, you know, I was traveling around the country. I lived in Montana and West Virginia and Virginia and Ohio and Pennsylvania as a news anchor and as a reporter, making no money and going wildly into debt in my credit cards. But all the while I was doing that, I was watching these other people. I was paying rent on properties that I was living in while I was there. Mm-hmm. To owners that I never met. They lived, you know, states away, or they lived 4 hours away, and I was mailing off $500 checks every month to these faceless people, and they were making passive income. And it didn't dawn on me for many years, but I started to realize that that's a game that I need to be in, because if everyone is doing it, these sort of quiet wealthy ninjas, and you don't know their names, but they might even be millionaires, I need to be involved in this. I need to figure out how to make this work.
So how old were you roughly when you started to realize this whole process of real estate?
You know, it wasn't until I had lived in Montana, I had lived in different parts of the country. I finally wound up in Orlando, Florida, and I bought my first one-bedroom condo. And I lived in it and for a television show that I was working on at the time. And I bought it for like $70,000 on a golf course. It was right before the crash in 2007, 2006 is when I bought it, roughly 2005. Something. So I had this condo in Florida, and that was where I first realized the power of sort of off-market real estate, which is there was a condo next door to the one I owned. It was a two-bedroom, and a woman had lived there for 30 years. She smoked heavily, and she unfortunately she passed away. I never actually met her. I never knew her. And the family inherited this property, and they were just kind of, I don't know, disgusted with it because it was just covered in nicotine. They didn't know what to do with it. And so there's a whole other world of real estate investing out there that doesn't involve like calling up a realtor. And don't, nothing against realtors. My wife's a realtor. My dad's a realtor. But when you really want to find great deals, you need to know how to find great deals. And they don't often sit on the open market at a retail price. And so I was able to talk to this family. They wanted to sell this property. They didn't want to list it with a realtor because it had all these problems. So I was able to offer them a great price. I went in and I would work nights. I worked mornings, and then all night I was over there ripping out drywall and, you know, painting cabinets and all of these things, and managed to finally, after 2 months of work, sell it right before the crash happened and made a good profit on it. And so that I realized then, I didn't know it at the time, but that was really like the foundation of everything I do today. It's like finding off-market properties that need a lot of work that I can renovate and place a great tenant in the property. And that's what I do at Morris Invest. And so we have, you know, clients now from all over the world that buy properties through us, and we do it for them. So they're busy doctors and lawyers, and we just, they know about real estate, they don't know how to do it, and we do all of the work for them. So, but that was really the first one.
So, okay, if I understand this correctly, you were finding properties that are off the market and then recommending those properties to people that work with you. Is that the case?
Well, that's what I do now with Morris Invest. So, mm-hmm. You know, what my team will do, and I've got, you know, a whole team of employees now. And so my office is in different markets in the country. So some of my primary markets are in the Midwest. You know, we're in Indiana, we're in Michigan, we're in parts of Florida where we can find great properties. I might buy, you know, 20 properties at one time mm-hmm. that are all in all manner of distress. Like they might be, you know, roof might be caving in, cabinets, kitchen's a mess, you know, water heater is 30 years old, whatever. And I go through and I totally rip them out and renovate them. And then, place a tenant in the property with a property management team and still have it be below market value as if I had worked with a realtor. Like a realtor would probably even be selling that same property for a few thousand more than what I'm able to do. And the price ranges are going to be like 30, 40, 50,000 for an all-in cost of a property. So that's my bread and butter and what I do. And that makes the bulk of my portfolio with my wife and I now are those types of properties.
I think it's so cool, but it seems like one of those things, and maybe this is my ignorance showing, do those properties come up as frequently as you would need for it to be like a good passive investing income?
Well, they do if you know where to look for them. And so that's finding the deal is the hardest part. Mm-hmm. So with our properties, we do it for you. You know, that's what my philosophy is in my company is, yes, you can go out and try to find properties in your own backyard, but chances are your own backyard is way overpriced. And, you know, most people think that the best properties are in their own backyard. They live in California, they live in New York and Chicago. You're going to drive out on the weekend and meet with a realtor and buy a single family home for $800,000. That's terrible return on investment. So what my properties are in the $40,000 range, 3-bedroom, 1-bath, totally renovated with a tenant in it, in some of the best rental markets in the country where those jobs aren't going to China and where they're stable even in a recession. They work for the local post office, the hospital, the local Amazon distribution center, the local factory, they're long-haul truckers who need a place to hang their hat. Those are my tenants, you know, nurses at the local hospital. And they, even in a recession, don't lose their job. It's the mid-level managers. It's the, you know, $150,000, $200,000 managers that lose their job. It's not the person delivering the milk who loses their job.
I think it's so cool, too. But I think that the coolest part is that you've got this, I mean, you're on the news, which is most people's dream, but you didn't stop there. You kept going and you kept figuring out ways to get more of a lifestyle balance, increase your income, but have that time balance too, where you can spend more time with your family. And I think that's super cool.
Yeah. You know, I'm very blessed. I mean, I pinch myself. I worked all over this country in the news business and went into massive debt and, you know, it was like $75,000 in credit card debt and then managed to get to the network. And, you know, I am blessed every day that I get to do that, but I'm also blessed in that I have the freedom during the week to be able to see my kids grow up. And I built this real estate company and a real estate portfolio with that time. And, you know, we were just kind of joking because my home office here where I work most of the time, and my little girl just ran in. She just lost her. She's 5 years old. She just lost her first tooth. And it was like wiggling for the past week. And so she ran in and right in the middle of our interview here and was like, Daddy, Daddy, I'm like, can we edit that out, please? Because, you know, I've lost a tooth. So, you know, that's I wouldn't change that for the world. And I know so many of our investors that we work with are sick and tired of spending 2 hours on the commute to and from work. And it frustrates the heck out of them. They want to spend more time with their kids. And that's where I think I'm really passionate about what my company does is try to help them realize that you can achieve financial freedom. And it's a pretty simple process that I walk people through.
Mm-hmm. So one of the pieces that I want to dive into a little bit more is this debt piece where you said it was $75,000 in credit card debt. Mm-hmm. tell me about that time in your life. Like, how were you feeling at that time? Like, what was going through your mind?
It was terrifying. I mean, it was also an affirmation of what I had been taught my whole life. It was, money doesn't belong to me. Money grows on trees. It does, money doesn't grow on trees. We're not the Rockefellers. So you're not worthy of success. You're not worthy. You know, this is where you were bound to be, right? Fearing money, fear of success. And so as I would live across the country and I use credit cards to pay for Chinese food, I was just paying my rent and not making enough to even cover the rent every month and slipping further and further in debt and making all sorts of financial mistakes. And I just never had the financial literacy. And it wasn't until I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad that I, something like a light bulb went off and I realized that sadly my dad was the poor dad, that I was taught growing up to the way in which you build wealth is to get a raise every few years and to put some money away in a retirement account. That's how you build wealth. Truth of the matter is it's the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. It's become an entrepreneur, own a business, and then own a business that moves into investing. So if you can be a business owner that invests, that's how you create true wealth in this country. Business owners own assets and they don't work for somebody else. They don't go through that whole process. So, it took me a long time to understand that, but I was slowly building up all this credit card debt. And one day I just had like a breakdown. It's how people kind of go cold turkey on smoking or drinking or whatever else. I got really serious about it and I didn't know it then, but it was the precursor to what I call my freedom number, which was like the game changer for me in my life. But when I wrote it all down, I wrote all the debt down on I made my own little piece of graph paper and I wrote down in the left column the names of the credit cards that had the debt, mm-hmm. even the car payment, all of the debt, my student loan, I wrote it all down. And then in the next column, I wrote the date and what the sum was. So it was January, and I wrote all of that debt for each of those credit cards, and I put a total at the bottom, like a spreadsheet. But I had that paper, and I folded it up, and I kept it in my day planner. And I constantly looked at it, and I just went after trying to knock off credit cards left and right. I tried to just save money, not spend money. And I just slowly started picking off these credit cards one by one by one, methodically. Mm-hmm. And it was a game changer for me to see that debt start to be wiped away.
That's amazing. Were you investing in real estate at the same time?
No, I wasn't. I was still paying rent and working in small market television in Dayton, Ohio is when I had this sort of mental collapse around my debt. And I wasn't making very much money, but people think you need to be a millionaire in order to do all this. You don't. I wasn't making very much money, and I managed to just not spend the money on Starbucks and these other things. And I started to just put the extra cash that I had available towards these credit cards, treated it as if I had no money. I would eat home instead of eating out. I was just being frugal, mm-hmm. To try to claw my way back out of this.
What was the hardest part for you about getting out of debt?
I think the hardest part was watching, maybe it's the fear of missing out and seeing other people like be able to do other things and to buy that car, to do those other, take those vacations. And I sort of made my own bed, so I had to lie in it. I didn't declare bankruptcy or anything like that. So I had to work to pay that all off. And what the sad thing is with all that credit card debt, I can't even remember what I bought.
It's like, it's the worst.
Right? It's like, what do I have anything to show for it? Maybe like a stereo. I don't even know. But most of it, I couldn't remember. It was probably, gas in my car. It was groceries. It was, going to the movies. It was like stuff that I don't remember what it was. And there's no reason that I needed to suffer for it.
I think so many times that's exactly what it is. You mentioned like the Chinese food or whatever. We all have something that we are spending just stupid amounts of money on. And we look back and we're like, are you kidding? I literally have nothing to show for this. And it does. It almost feels like such a waste. So I think that's cool to hear your story about some of the sacrifices that you made that were not huge, these big life-changing sacrifices, but they compounded into really great results for you. You mentioned your freedom number. Can you tell everybody what the heck is a freedom number and how do you actually figure that piece out?
So if you're driving right now, and I don't want to cause anyone to get in an accident or, you know, pull over to the side of the road, or if you're on the treadmill, maybe we can link it up in the show notes or whatever, but I've got a free download. So people can download it later with their spouse, their partner, just download it. It's like 3 pages. Just on our website, it's just morrisinvest.com/freedom. It's super simple. And it'll walk you through step-by-step how to do this, but I'll kind of give you the broad strokes right now so people can wrap their head around this, especially if you're considering getting in real estate investing. And this is really what it comes down to. And it all started because I was at the network. I'm now a network newscaster making good money. And my wife comes down to my office years ago and she says, "We can't pay the mortgage this month." And we owned 2 rental properties at the time that were producing. I think I bought them. I bought them for like $25,000, put maybe $17,000 worth of work into them. They were cash flowing about $800 a month. Nice. And they were consistently producing cash flow for me. And yet I didn't excel at that. I didn't have more properties than that. So I'm like crying. I'm like, what are we doing wrong, honey? Like, what's happening here? I don't get it. Why am I suffering? Well, I can't pay our mortgage. What's happening? And I jumped up to the whiteboard and I said, wait a second. This is going to stop tonight. And that's when the freedom number was sort of born. And I said, how many rental properties would it take for us to be financially free? And the way I say that is most people say, if you ask them how much money they want to make, they just throw out like an arbitrary number. They'll say, I want to be a millionaire. But it's such an arbitrary number. It's meaningless. How about this though, instead? What if so what I teach you to do in the freedom number cheat sheet is I want you to add up 6 months of your monthly expenses. Take the average of those 6 months. So what does an average month look like to you, right? We're include everything in there. Netflix subscription, your gas bill, your groceries, your mortgage, your rent, kids' school, uniforms for school, whatever it is. But take the average of those 6 months. So maybe it's $5,000. Maybe it's $8,000. Pad it a little bit. Add about 10% in there just for trips, vacations, maybe a few more nights out to dinner. So don't be totally right on the nose. Go a little bit more. And then let's take the amount of rental properties it would take to cover that. So for each, you know, if each of them is producing $700 a month in cash flow, how many rental properties would it take you to cover $5,000 a month? And that's financial freedom. And for most people, so when we get on the phone at Morris Invest, when people schedule a call with us, the first question we'll ask is, what's your freedom number? And most people will say it's 10 or it's 11. 11 rental properties and you'll have financial freedom.
Wow.
So I said to my wife that night, I said, how many rental properties would it take? What are our monthly expenses? And how many of these properties would it take for us to be financially free? And we set our sights on that goal and we never looked back. Now it was like a tangible goal we had in front of us and we could figure out what we wanted to get towards so that no matter what happened in the day job with a paycheck, I knew that my family was taken care of because of cash flow that was coming in every month from tenants.
That's such a cool way of looking at it too. It really breaks down the scariness. If you're looking at $1 million, that seems so far-fetched for so many people that they're like, ooh, I'm never going to get there. But right. If it's 5 properties, I mean, heck, that's tangible. I can handle 5 properties. So I really like the way you break that down. And just again, guys, it'll be in the show notes, but in case you didn't catch that, it's morrisinvest.com/freedom. That's where you can download the 3-page PDF, go through, figure out what is that financial freedom number for you? How many properties is it? And that's where you can find that resource. I think that's super cool. So as you were looking at this, tell me about your first property, the first time you invested in a property where you're like, this could actually do really well. Like I might actually pursue this further.
My wife had to remind me of this story recently because we were just working on a book together. And she said, you know, we need to tell this story because what happened was I was on a flight to New Zealand of all places. I was going there to visit a friend of mine who's a great photographer and he invited me to stay at his house and we're going to shoot photos for a few days. So I'm on this flight. Next to me are 2 individuals, husband and wife. They're in their probably late 50s, early 60s. And we got to talking after the 16-hour flight. And, you know, you're half asleep, you're trying to sleep, you wake up, you've got like an hour left before we land and we get to talking. And they said, I said, how long are you going to be in New Zealand? Or they asked me first, I said, I'm going to be there for 5 days. And I said, how long are you guys going to be there? And they said, we're going to be there for 2 months.
Wow.
And I said, 2 months? What do you guys do that you can be in New Zealand for 2 months? You know, they weren't retired, it didn't seem. And he said, I'm a real estate investor. And I said, ah, okay. How do you mean? And he said, well, my partner and I, he's back in the States. We buy properties in affordable markets that generate a really high ROI, return on investment. And we place tenants in them and we just, that's what we do. We buy them and cash flow them. And so while I'm here, my properties are producing cash flow and that's all I do. And I said, that's all you do? Yeah. So everything changed for me after that. And I spent the next hour picking his brain on what, okay, how do I understand return on investment? How do I understand ROI? What does all that mean? And it changed my life. That one flight changed my life. And I asked him, where is he buying properties? What towns? What, you know, what does he look for when he buys a property? All of that. And I got back and I immediately made some contacts, started building a team, hired a contractor slowly. It took me many years to get a great team. But in the beginning, I just kind of threw spaghetti at a wall and hoped some stuff stuck. I overpaid for a couple of my early properties because I used a realtor. You know, it was fine. I didn't pay too much, but I still more than I would pay today and what I may be able to do for my clients. But I renovated the property. I over upgraded the property. That first one, I overdid the hardwood floors. I put in appliances, and now we don't even put appliances in our properties. Our tenants provide their own appliances, but I put in all new like refrigerators and washer and dryer and all that stuff. And that's not expected in that town. And I didn't know what I didn't know, you know, and
crazy.
Yeah. And you just do extra things above and beyond that you don't need to do. And, that first property, and then I quickly bought a second one, and those two are still in my portfolio today, and they still produce about $800 a month in cash flow. And I've got tenants in there. I think one tenant signed a 5-year lease. Wow. On the one property, another signed a 2-year lease. Yeah, and one of the tenant is a single mom with a daughter, wanted to be in the school district where our property was located, and she works. She's 17 years with the U.S. Postal Service. That was one of my first tenants. And that's a typical tenant, typical neighborhood. You drive down the streets in those neighborhoods, and everyone's at work during the day. It's blue collar, hardworking neighborhoods in the Midwest part of the country. And so that was my first property, and I've kept that same strategy, that same property profile, and listen to my guy on the New Zealand flight and never look back.
How did you finance that first property?
Well, because I had gone through the ringer and had survived the crash of 08 and 09, and I actually had a foreclosure and was in, all this debt and had all these issues, I couldn't get a loan. My credit was ruined. I had gone through a foreclosure. Once I had sold that property that I rehabbed in Florida, I made some good money, but then I invested in some speculative land project, which, you learn these lessons. Now I don't do any speculation. I buy actual properties with actual tenants, I don't buy things that don't exist anymore. And that's what I did. And I lost my shirt and woke up one morning, had all my assets frozen. I had my bank accounts were frozen, and I couldn't even buy a coffee that morning. I went to use my debit card, and it wouldn't work. And I went up to my office and looked on the computer, and my account was negative red. And I just panicked. So I couldn't get a loan. So I just had to be creative about it. And I saved up cash, and I actually was able to borrow from my 401k, not withdraw. Yeah. But borrow from my 401k as a loan to myself, bought those first two properties and paid the loan back out of my paycheck. And it's a killer strategy because it's your own money sitting there,
right.
And to be able to borrow from yourself as the bank of you, it's a double whammy because the interest you're paying back to yourself, you get back. Plus you can buy a rental property. Now you're adding to your net worth cash flow. And so that's how I had to do it. I had to use cash in the bank, no financing, and some of my own money.
That sounds like a strategy that I personally would be really comfortable with too, because I'm very risk averse. I'm not going to lie. That stuff scares me to death. So seeing that it's something that's not going to necessarily break the bank and can immediately give me cash flow gives me that peace of mind almost. So with the properties that you invest in, what's the average, cost of a property that you're looking at? It sounds like it's fairly small amounts.
So if I buy now, I've got a whole team and we do this. I have an my acquisitions manager and so forth. So what I do for our clients, if we have, let's say a typical client of ours might be you know, husband and wife who have a newborn and they're now stopping about thinking, stop, you know, they've gotten out of the selfish stage of their life, right? Now they're thinking about, oh, I better start building something for my family. And they have enough maybe to buy one property or two properties. That's like a typical client of ours. So what the properties that if they were going to try to go out and do that on their own in California, they'd never be able to do it. Right. You know, I'm able to buy 20 water heaters at one time with our, you know, in bulk. So I'm able to save money across the board or all these furnaces and all this sort of stuff. So the average property, I guess maybe in the 20, 25,000 range, but now I'm also going to put like 20, 25 into it after I buy it, you know,
So crazy.
Yeah. So I'll rip out the roof. My roofing guy who's on my staff, you know, and I'm able to get great rates because they work for me and they know that they're not going to be looking for the next paycheck so they don't gouge me. You know, they know that they're going to do 10 houses this month with me. So I'll put on a new roof. I'll put in a new water heater. I'll put in a new furnace. I update the plumbing. I update the electric. I put in new kitchen cabinets, you know, update the flooring, drywall, paint, carpet, et cetera, landscaping, electric. So my philosophy is on these like small 1,000-square-foot homes is if you take care of those main systems, you know, you put in the new windows, the furnace, the water heater, electric, plumbing, then that's a bulletproof house for like 15 years before you're going to have to put in a new water heater again. And by then, that house will now have paid me back three times over what I bought it for by the time I have to put in a new furnace 15 years from now or, you know, put on a new overlay on the roof or something like that. So when you take care of those main systems, who cares about drywall? You know, I can patch drywall. You can clean carpets or update the carpets. That kind of stuff's easy stuff. That's the cosmetic easy stuff. The big money ticket items, those are the things that keep the house, you know, repair free for so long if you take care of those things on the front end. And that's what I do on our properties.
This is so dang cool to me. So give me some context too. Now with your business, like how many properties are you transactioning through per month roughly?
Well, last week we closed 20 properties. So we're in some different markets across the country. You know, we're in Michigan, we're in Indiana, Florida, and Ohio. And so we closed 20 properties last week. You know, the funniest thing is we were on a Disney cruise with the kids and that week I try to unplug as much as I can. And here's the funny thing. We had a record week the week that I was away, which tells you something. Like, yeah. We closed on, I think we had 29 properties that we closed on that week. And you know, I have multiple crews, so, you know, and each property's in a different state of repair. So one crew will be starting on the roof. The next crew will be starting on, you know, the siding and soffits, and the other crew will be doing flooring and all of those things. It's a lot of moving parts, but it's a lot of fun.
That is so killer. I love that. 29 properties is amazing. Like my mind doesn't even fathom that. That's just so incredible. I think it's amazing. You mentioned the book. So can we talk a little bit about the book that you're working on?
Yeah. So it just came out. And something that I did years ago, and it's all part of real estate investing, but one thing that I discovered, and it was almost like a monk handed me this little pamphlet one time when I lived in Philadelphia, and it explained this idea that I could pay off my primary mortgage in like 3 to 5 years by using this like strategy that no one knew about. So the book is all about how to, you know, pay off your primary mortgage using your home equity line of credit. And most people, like, it makes their heads spin. Mm-hmm. So in the book, my wife and I walk through step by step by step on how to do this and how to structure this. And I've done it personally multiple times. We've had investors that we've helped do this who've come back to us a few years later and said, we did it. We can't believe it. The house is now paid off. And what you're doing in this strategy is you're basically trading simple interest, which is what a HELOC is, or a home equity line of credit, versus amortized interest, which is your 30-year mortgage on your home. So you're trading one for the other. And if you structure it the way that we teach you in the book, every month you're basically making multiple payments towards your principal balance of your primary mortgage, and you pay it off at such an accelerated rate, it will blow your mind. And once you start to see, you know, because if you buy a $200,000 property, you're probably paying what, maybe almost $400,000 when you're all said and done with it, right? Because you're going to almost pay like twice as much because you're going to be paying interest on that property for many years to come. So what we teach you to do is beat the system of paying interest and really drill down on that principal balance immediately. And your home equity line of credit works like a credit card. Mm-hmm. Because it works like a credit card using simple interest, it enables you to trade one interest, which is worse, for one interest, which is better, and to make these small micro payments every month from your home equity line of credit towards your principal balance of your home. And banks really don't want you to know about it, but it's a crazy, crazy strategy. And once you start doing it, you're going to get phone calls from banks, especially your primary holder. They're going to say, they're going to want you to refinance because they notice suddenly you're paying down your principal balance very quickly and they're going to make less money. And they start calling you, asking you to refinance. We've got some great rates right now. Why don't you take advantage of some of our new programs? And it's going to be, you're going to be like, nope, thank you. I'm all good. Thank you. So that's what the book is all about.
That is so cool. And they can find that on your website?
Yeah, they can find that on our website, or if they just do a search on Amazon, it's on Amazon as well.
And it's called How to Pay Off Primary Mortgage, Your Primary Mortgage?
Yeah, it's How to Pay Off Your Primary Mortgage and by leveraging your home equity line of credit. And so I think, it's been a game changer. And so many people write to us, my wife and I, like, okay, I had to read this three times. I'm trying to understand it, and it's really complicated. So we wanted to lay it out step by step by step in a book that was easy for people to understand.
That's so cool. I appreciate you writing the book too and sharing all of your knowledge for everybody in a budget-friendly way too. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for letting me share it.
Yeah. So let's start to wrap it up. Is there anything that people should know about real estate investing? Do you have any like words of wisdom for a beginning real estate investor?
Well, one of the things I always talk about is that you've got to just take action. You know, we talk about risk, and I honestly believe real estate is one of the least risky ways to invest. It's the number one way to build wealth in this country. You know, more millionaires and billionaires have been created from real estate investing than any other form of investing. And most of the time, you don't even know who they are. They're sort of the quiet ninjas that are in your neighborhood, and they own millions of dollars in real estate. They live financially free because they have passive income from a few rental properties. So it doesn't have to be risky. If you do it the way that we do it, it's not risky. It's not risky at all. Remember, real estate can't ever go down to $0 in value. True. Like a stock can, you know? So if you buy a $45,000 house, you're holding it for the rest of your life. It's producing $700 a month. What's the worst that can happen? A recession hits and the value drops from 45 to 40. Okay. But guess what? It's still rented. So you're not investing for appreciation. You're investing for that $700 a month that you're going to hold for the rest of your life. And by the way, you're going to hand it down to your children. So my tax accountant, who's one of the smartest real estate tax accountants in the world, used to work for Ronald Reagan. He says, if you invest in real estate and you pay taxes, you're doing it wrong. Wow. So there's so much to start to unpack once you become a real estate investor. If you're paying taxes and you're a real estate investor, you're doing something wrong. So that's my little parting bit of wisdom for people who are like, you know, fearing or scared or thinking, oh, that's risky. It sounds too good to be true.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. And then where do people go to learn more about you and your brand?
Well, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably love podcasts. So come on over and listen to the Investing in Real Estate podcast. I know it's a generic name, but it's just Investing in Real Estate with Clayton Morris. And my wife joins us on Wednesdays on the show. And we talk about how to structure things with your family and your, you know, setting up your LLCs and your all of that stuff for taxes and everything. So my wife's great with that side of the business as well.
That's so cool. Clayton, thank you so much for taking some time and for sharing your five-year-old losing her tooth moment with me too. That's pretty special.
It was. Sorry for the interruption, but
worth it. It's okay.
Well, thank you so much for that. And thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was really fun chatting with you. And everything will be linked in the show notes, guys. So make sure you go check it out on themoneynerds.com and get all of these really cool resources that Clayton is offering us. And make sure you go check out his podcast as well. I know it's going to be definitely on my morning commute, the thing that I'm listening to. So Clayton, thank you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Whitney.
All right, guys, what'd you think? I loved this episode with Clayton Morris. I thought it was so interesting to hear how he's a news anchor by day, quote unquote day, and also a real estate investor at night. And I think that's really cool. I love the combination of the two as well. I think it's really awesome to see people that are multifaceted and not just one direction. So I thought that part was really interesting. The other part that I thought was really cool was he talked towards the end about the home equity line of credit to paying down your mortgage in 5 years. So I'm doing some research into that, guys, and I'm going to be digging around and seeing if it's actually worth it? And I'm presuming it is. That's the cool part. So I'm going to do some digging and I will keep you posted probably in the Facebook group on what I find. All right. If you have been listening to this podcast and you've been kind of creeping around and not being active, come say hello, leave me a review, add a comment. Just let me know what you're thinking or join the Facebook group. That's always a good way too. I just love to see and meet people that are listeners to this show. It gets a little lonely on this end, so it's kind of fun to see who's actually tuning in. I appreciate it. Your subscribes, your reviews, all of that stuff means the world to me. Keep it coming. I am so grateful for you as listeners and for taking this journey with me. And I will see you guys next week for our 1 year anniversary episode on the Money Nerds podcast. See you then.